everyone. Welcome back to High T Hoops. This is Brian Boucher at the Duke of Hoops. And as always, I am joined by Skylar Smith, the Duchess. What's up?
Hello. So excited for today's episode.
I know. So today we have a very special guest, Kennedy Leonard of the London Lions, who we invited on because she was the WBBL trophy final MVP. And then she went ahead and set the record for number of assists in a single WBBL game yesterday. So incredible timing. Kennedy, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're going to change it up a little bit from our typical interview format. We're going to start with listener questions. And there were some good ones, Skylar. So we're going to start with some. Shannon Torrey at ShazTorrey7. So shout out, Shannon. Thank you for this question. Coach at Tayside Musketeers Basketball Club. Who inspired you to take up basketball, Kennedy?
Who inspired me? I would probably say my dad, honestly. Mm-hmm. Growing up and stuff like that, he was always taking me to the gym with him. And he's loved basketball for as long as I can remember. So probably my dad, I'd say. He obviously still cares about it the most, like, to this day as well. My family loves basketball, but my dad is the one who's most invested in it, I would say. Mm-hmm. So definitely my dad.
How old were you when you started?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to ask.
I want to say I was about four.
Yeah,
I was quite young. Like, my dad would just go to the gym to play rec, you know, on Saturdays and Sundays and stuff like that, and he would take me with mm-hmm. him, and I would just stand on the sideline and watch. But I'd say around four I probably started to pick up a ball, but didn't really start playing, like, actually playing until probably like six or seven or even eight. But I'd always played on teams that were above my age, so that probably helped mm-hmm. a bit as well. But yeah, no, I've always been exposed to it. And I grew up in Chicago, which is a huge basketball city, you know, Michael Jordan and stuff like that. So was exposed to it really early.
Yeah, we had Ashley Hamilton on the podcast, who plays for the Plymouth Raiders and on Team GB. Yeah. And he was like, I was like 15 or 16. And we're like, whoa, that is insane.
And yeah, you're like, more it's, and more.
Yeah, it's the UK. A lot of the UK pros started really late in life.
Yeah, it feels like over here, it's like it's harder to get into. You see more and more people get into it like at age 15, 16, and they're still so raw when they're, you know, going to college and stuff like that. So you imagine how much more skill development they could have if they started at, you know, what we start at in America, you know, four or 5 years old.
Yeah, exactly. Next question, Stephen Ferguson at Astro Dropped, who is the acting chair and equality champion at Basketball Scotland. He said, we are very proud of you in Scotland, even though we could have benefited from some of those assists on Sunday going Pride's way. What does Scotland mean to you and your family?
Yes, my mom was born in Scotland, grew up there for a few years and then moved away. But she loves Scotland. I still have family who lives in Scotland. I've been to Scotland twice. Haven't spent as much time there as I would like, but obviously it is my roots. And you see like all those movies like Braveheart and stuff like that all set in Scotland. Yeah. So I've watched all those and the language, you know, how they have that weird accent that's weirder than the English, like the London accent, you know.
You said it, not us.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's just different. But my mom obviously still has an accent and stuff like that. So it's around me all the time, I would say. My sister's name is Mackenzie, which is a very Scottish name. So, just the culture of it really is, I think, what's important to me and how people live there. Because I feel like in America, we have everything given to us. You know what I mean? It's we grow up in a very a very good culture where everything's kind of handed to us. We don't have to really work for anything. And I think in places like Scotland and stuff like that, you see a lot of people who really work for what they have. So I think we can learn from that. And I think my mom has tried to teach that and instill that in me and my sisters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I saw an article that you played or you flew the flag for the FIBA Women's Eurobasket for Scotland. What was that experience like?
Yeah, so I played under 20s. I was the only Scottish I played for GB, but I was obviously the only Scottish player.
Yeah.
And it was cool because I know that Scotland doesn't have a lot of people who have played for GB in the past. So to be a part of it and be the only one, I think is cool because you can represent, you don't only, you're representing GB, but you're also representing an entire, you know, country of Scotland, as opposed to the other 9 or 10 players who are just England.
Yep.
So it brings a little bit of something different and something for the Scottish people to have a little pride in.
Yeah.
Love to see that. And then this one, I think it's from your Instagram, Kennedy, when you shared the story out. Scout Annie Otis, who taught you your corner fadeaway jumper? Hint, he has a daughter named Charlie. This might be an inside question or joke.
I love when we get questions that just make no sense to us.
Yes.
Yeah, no, it's Chris McIntyre, one of my family's really, really good friends. So we used to live in Texas. We just actually moved to Colorado, my family. Mm-hmm. So I haven't seen him since I left. But no, he's a great guy. Has a little daughter. We'd always go to the gym together and we'd shoot that corner shot. So that's probably what he's referring to. But yeah, he's a great guy, great family.
Got it. Shout out to that question. I was like, all right, I'm taking a flyer on this. Hopefully she knows what he's talking about.
No, I did. Yeah.
All right, let's go into Texas and Colorado a little bit more, because in the UK, you know, obviously even like BBL games are very small compared to like a Texas high school basketball game or a lot of high school basketball across the country. So you're a 2015 graduate of Carroll Senior High School in Southlake, Texas. You led Carroll to 26-7 your senior season. There's so many awards here, Kennedy. Oh, just across
them,
the board.
Skip them.
All district MVP for second straight season. Averaged 17-7-6-3. I mean, there's pack in the stack sheet. So give UK fans a little bit of a picture of what was high school basketball like in Texas? What was that experience? Because you were varsity all 4 years. What was it like playing in that environment? Just paint a picture for us a little bit.
I would say it's hard to explain to people who haven't been exposed to it in America. Like, basketball in America is a completely different animal than it is in the UK. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. I think it's just people are more in tune to it there, and I've had more time to get in tune with it. Like you said, I played varsity all 4 years at the biggest division in Texas. So,
yeah. Which is 7A.
I graduated. I think it was when I was there, it was 6A. 6A? Yeah, something like that. It always has two numbers, like 6-5A or something like that.
Yeah.
But it had around 1,000 people in my graduating class. Mm-hmm. That's just my grade. So that's huge in itself. Like, you don't even see that in entire schools in other states, let alone here in the UK. Yeah.
Well, Montana high school basketball, where I played, our top division was 2A. And so that was the difference. You're like many, many more A's above us in Texas.
Yeah, no, it's crazy. Like, I had a friend who who went to school in a 2A in Texas, and or 1A, and his graduating class was 36 people. And I'm like, that's insane. I had 940 more people or whatever. But it was a great experience. I had a really good coach. Her name is Coach Morrison, and she was a part of like the Nike family. So we got a lot of things from Nike for that. And then I played club basketball with a Nike team as well. So it was good to mix with girls from other parts of Texas who were at really good schools as well. Like I played with, you know, Erica Gumake, the Gumake sisters, Brooke McCarty, Ariel Atkins, people like that. And still a lot of people who are in college in the NCAA tournament right now.
Yeah.
Actually. So yeah, I still have a few friends who play now, but it was a good experience. Obviously, like you said, it was huge. So we would play tournaments like in Duncanville and stuff like that. And their arena is bigger than any arena I've been to here. And it's a high school arena. You know what I mean? So those little differences, we were like, okay. And I'm not sure if that's every state, but Texas is huge. So they put a lot of money into, they put a lot of money into their sports, especially football. I think our football stadium seats 14,000 people, and that's a high school football stadium.
Yeah.
More than some actual colleges have. So no, it was a good experience. So I got to play all 4 years. I started all 4 years, had good teammates, made good friends, like relationships I still have today. And I had a good enough high school career to go to a good college and make an impact in college as well. So I think that was also important, that I, you know, went somewhere where I could show off that I had the ability to play in college, and a place that allowed me to show off that ability at the same time.
Yeah. And so I lived in Denver for about 6 years. So I'm a Nuggets fan. So great to see in Boulder.
Nuggets, baby.
Going up to University of Colorado. So what was it like playing at CU? Like you picking the college for that reason, making that impact, and you're the all-time assist leader there as well. There's just a lot of accolades, titles. But what was it like playing D1 hoops? Because you were there all 4 years and you had an incredible career.
Yeah, Colorado is an awesome place, not only just to play basketball, but to live, as you know.
Yeah, Boulder's amazing.
Boulder is. My dad was born in Colorado, both my sisters, and then my parents both went to school at Colorado State. So I had been around Colorado a lot, you know, growing up, hearing stories about my dad and going back and visiting there. So I knew a lot about it. And then when I had the opportunity to go there, I had a lot of schools I could have gone to, but I kind of wanted to go to a place where I could make an impact right away and create create like a legacy. And yeah, it was a good experience. Obviously my freshman year, we didn't win many games. Sophomore year was, we had a new coaching staff come in. So everybody who recruited me left and we got a whole new coaching staff, which is a bit different.
That's tough.
Yeah, but it was, it was tough, but it was good also. I think I learned a lot being there, like a lot more than I would have learned had I gone maybe to one of my other, you know, schools who was always, you know, like say Baylor or South Carolina, they're always in the top 10. So you always know what you're going to get. At least at Colorado, I didn't, you know, necessarily know what I was going to get. And I got to experience things that I didn't prepare myself for. And that have made me, I guess, into a better person and basketball player today. So, yeah, I think just being able to play there, I created relationships with people who didn't play basketball, who did, you know, did play basketball, stuff like that. So it exposes you to a lot of things. You have to learn time management. You have to learn that not everything always goes your way. Not everything's handed to you, that kind of thing. But I think I played in a really good conference, the Pac-12 conference, which I would say is the best women's basketball conference, at least when I was playing in it.
Yeah,
it was pretty good. So I think just being able to play against those type of caliber players, you know, day in and day out was probably one of the most beneficial things for me. Even if we didn't win every game, at least I was getting, you know, to play against those type of people and get that kind of, I guess, resume put together for myself.
Yeah. Two questions, Skylar, before you jump into WBBL. Sorry. I have to follow up on the Nuggets. So you're a Nuggets fan? Is that your NBA team?
Yeah, that's easily my NBA team. Yeah.
Nuggets love all that.
They just got a good trade, actually.
I know. Aaron Gordon. It's looking up from here. Yeah, sorry, Skylar. Yeah. Sorry, you get Michigan all the time. I went to Dartmouth. We never make the tournament. We don't do anything in basketball. Yeah, so yeah. I need to take some dubs where I can. Favorite player on the Nuggets right now?
Joker, easily.
Yeah,
I mean the
assists. You guys are king and queen there.
I just like the way he acts. Like I saw something the other day on Twitter that was like, they asked James Harden, "Why are you the MVP?" And James Harden's like, "Because I'm James Harden," or something like that. And they asked Joker, "Why are you the MVP?" And he's like, "Well, I don't even know what he said, but it was so much different than what Harden said. It was like, well, I do this or this or this." And he's like, "There's one about him and LeBron," and he's like, "Yeah, I'm that athletic," or something like that. Like, I'm just as athletic as LeBron, but nobody gives me like props for it. Stuff like that. I just like his, I like his demeanor and the way he acts and the way he carries himself. I really like him. But I like all of them. Like, my sisters went to Mizzou. Mm-hmm. So they like Michael Porter Jr. They like him a lot because he's a Mizzou kid. And my sister actually lives in Denver as well. So she is also now a huge Nuggets fan, and it helps that he's on their team. So yeah, not too bad. I like Jamal Murray too, but he's gone down on my list a bit because he hasn't been playing as well.
He's just so inconsistent.
Yeah, it kills us. It absolutely kills us. But hoping that he can get a little bit more consistent to help us out a bit.
Yeah. Well, we'll have a Nuggets pod later. Skylar, we can move
That's
on.
Fine.
Yeah, did you get it out of your system?
Yeah, I think I got a little bit out of my system. Yeah.
Just making sure. So you joined the Lions after a professional season in Germany. So what excited you about playing in the WBBL and for the Lions specifically?
Yeah, I actually never thought about it. And then I had met Mark, our head coach, through the British team, through Great Britain. He was a member of the staff and had helped me with something. And so I'd met him through that, but hadn't spoken to him for a while. And then I received an email from him and he was like, "We have a new sponsorship, a lot more money coming in. Would you be interested ever in playing in London?" And I was like, why not? I have family here. I have ties here. People would die to live in London. So I'm like, you know, what can you offer? What can be, you know, what can we come up with, kind of thing? And yeah, he gave me a great offer and I thought, it's, you know, COVID, nothing's ever promised. So why not, if I'm ever going to do it, why not do it now? And so I said, yeah, sure, I'll come, sign the papers. And then here I am.
Yeah.
What was it like with COVID and with the pandemic? Cause you'd said you joined in September. Was it like the uncertainty of the pandemic and just having kind of 777 partners come in and more stability? Was that an attractive thing coming in?
Yeah, for sure. Because I know that a lot of other leagues, like my agent was telling me, a lot of other leagues were unsure if they were going to have a season or not. Mm-hmm. And Mark had kept telling me that we were for sure going to have a season and that the money was there regardless. Even if we didn't have a season, if I signed, then the money would be there regardless, kind of thing. And so obviously, if I wanted money, I wouldn't play women's basketball because it's hard to make a living playing women's basketball. So for me, it wasn't even all about the money, but that was also a nice perk that I could have, you know, in case something happened. So that was nice. But I also, like I said, I have family here. So I thought, okay, if I get over here, then I can see my family and stuff like that. So the only thing that really COVID hindered was, I think for us, it was, I know England was in the lockdown when I got here. So we just had to fill out like a sheet to exempt the like 10-day quarantine stage. So if you're an elite athlete, you could exempt it. So that's all it really, really did for us initially. And then obviously if you got COVID or something like that, your team had to isolate and things like that. So when I got, I got COVID in November, maybe.
Oh no.
Yeah. I got it. So we had to isolate and sit out, I think for like 14 days or something like that in the beginning of November. But other than that, our team has been very lucky to not have run into any other problems with it, knock on wood.
Yeah.
But so COVID, it's just been, like I said, my family this year, I haven't even gotten to see them yet because of COVID. So that's been kind of stinky. And my grandma actually got COVID and passed away from it. Oh. And she was here. Oh, yeah.
I'm sorry to hear that.
No, it's okay. Yeah. It happened in December. So it's been a little bit, but no, like I would have loved to see her. And that was also a huge reason why I came to London. Cause I know that she could have watched some games and she never got to watch them because she was always here and I was in America playing. As well as my aunt who's here. So I was like, oh, it's another great attraction to England is that my family can come and watch the games. And even though my grandma's not here anymore, my aunt still lives in York, which is like 2.5 hours by train. So she's watching online right now because we obviously can't have fans. But if I come back, I was like, oh, you can come next year whenever you want and stuff like that. So hoping that COVID dies down a bit with the vaccines and stuff, fans can come again.
Yeah. Hopefully we're coming out of this pandemic. It's looking better and better every day.
Yeah. Fingers crossed with the vaccines and stuff and herd immunity. I feel like we should be getting closer to the end now.
Yeah.
How have you been recovering from COVID? I feel like I hear about a lot of people being like, athletes can get it. Like they're the like healthiest and strongest among us. Like it doesn't really matter. But then you hear about like some of these athletes who get it. And then, you know, 6 months later, they're still having breathing problems and they're still being affected by it. Have you had anything like that?
No, so I was actually quite lucky. I only lost my sense of taste and smell or whatever, like my sense of smell and my taste. So they say if you lose only those two things, you have a really mild case of it. So I was lucky. I know two of my teammates got it around the same time I did and they both lost their taste and smell as well, but nothing else really. And then coming back from Christmas, two other of my teammates got it, but they both had different like symptoms. So they both didn't lose their taste and smell, but one of the teammates still has, like you said, problems like breathing and stuff like that. Whereas the three of us who had it before, we don't have any. I mean, my smell isn't all the way back and some things don't taste the same for me. Like my toothpaste, I can't taste anymore. Or I used to love peanut butter. And now peanut butter just tastes like bleh to me. It's like, just tastes like nothing, which is depressing. Cause I love peanut butter.
Yeah.
So that's been tough, but no, I was really lucky. I only lost it for about 2 weeks. And that was really the only symptoms I had except for being just tired. But I know my other teammate, she had it and she's now, I think like three months out of it. And she still can't breathe and stuff like that. So it's crazy how it can affect different people. And it really doesn't matter if you're in shape, if you're not in shape, or you know what I mean? You can be as safe as you want to be as well. Like I literally just went to practice and came home, did everything my teammates did. And I just happened to be the one who got it. So it just, you realize it can happen to anybody, no matter what you're doing. So as long as you just have to try your best to be safe with it, but also at the same time, you have to be so precautious because you can get it anywhere, anytime, anyhow.
Yeah,
definitely. Shifting gears a little bit, what is your favorite thing about living in the UK? I know you had spent a little bit of time there before you lived there. And then what is the thing you miss most about the US when you live there? I mean, you mentioned peanut butter. Peanut butter is a little bit harder to find in the UK. It's a bit more expensive. It's not as common. Mm. Are there things that you're finding are like harder to find and you're missing them?
Yeah, I would say my favorite thing about being here is the public transport, like the option to just hop on at any time you want. It makes life so much easier because in America I have a car, so I can go wherever I want whenever I want. But if you wanted, like Denver, for example, not my family just moved there, I live there, so I know that the traffic gets horrendous at certain times and stuff like that. So having public transport available, like you can literally just tap and hop on a train, hop on a bus, hop on whatever, and you're there within like 10 minutes. You don't have to sit in traffic. And I think the most it costs is like £1.50. Yeah. So it beats like Ubering or anything like that. So obviously in America, we don't have that option, which I feel like it needs to, I mean, in New York and stuff, you have the subway or whatever, yeah. but you don't have, you know, the availability that you do have here, which makes a huge difference.
Big miss from America to put in any yeah. sort of public transportation. I mean, I was Southern California, Denver, Texas. It's yeah. just like, you're driving an hour, no matter what you're doing. Yeah. Schuyler, Michigan. Yeah. I mean, it's Schuyler's fault. It's Detroit's fault that this is the case. But
for real,
the auto lobbyists.
Yeah, they definitely missed out on it. And now you can't really do anything about it because these like routes that they have in here stuff have been here for, you know, 300, 400 years and you can't really do much about that.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
but no, definitely I would say the public transport. And then, yeah, what I miss about America, I miss my family. I miss them a ton. And I have two puppies that are my puppies that I got when I was in school. And my parents, thank God, my parents are lifesavers. They take care of them and do everything for them when I'm not home. But I miss them because I honestly spend more time away from them than I do with them. So mm-hmm. I'm like, they probably don't even remember me anymore. I get pictures of them and stuff like that. Yeah, yeah. But I talk to them through FaceTime and everything, but it's not the same as actually being there with them. So I get really excited to see them. They're German Shepherds. Let me see if I have a photo of them. They're my background on my phone, so it should be quick.
Yeah.
Let's see.
Oh,
they're so cute.
Yeah, this one's Gus. Oh, and this is Emma. So they're both rescue puppies, and I got them when I was in school. But yeah, my parents take care of them and everything. But I miss them a ton, and I miss Mexican food.
Yes,
that's a big thing. They don't have a lot of Tex-Mex too. Is like a special kind of food, and they don't have that as much here.
Yeah.
And so they have Mexican places, but it's not like American Mexican. Like they don't know what queso is. They don't have any of that. So that's another thing that I've missed significantly. I'm like going to pack next time I come Velveeta and like Rotel and make my own queso because they don't have it here anywhere. You can't buy it. You can't make it. So I'm like, all right, I'm just going to have to pack some and make it myself.
Yeah.
Wasn't there a Taco Bell coming to London? Is there a Taco Bell in London?
There's one in London, but that's the thing. Like they have like Taco Bell and then they have McDonald's. Like they have places that America has, KFC, but they're completely different. Like mm-hmm. the McDonald's, I would actually rather eat here than I would in America. I trust it more here for some reason. I don't know why.
It's so much better in the UK for yeah. some reason.
It just tastes like it's like better. You don't feel like it's processed as much, stuff like that. Yeah. KFC as well. Like I would never, you wouldn't catch me ever going to KFC in America. And here I'm like, oh, I'll go to KFC every other day.
Yeah, so KFC is so good there.
Yeah, it is. It's just different. I don't know how to explain it. Like something inside me is like, oh, okay, I trust it more here than I do in America. Maybe it's like their food laws here or something like that. But
it's definitely that. Yeah. Scotland
food laws.
Scotland was yeah. like Subway sandwiches aren't real food because they have too much processed ingredients or something. Oh, yeah. So they had to change
That's
it.
Other thing. Yeah, they have Subways here, completely different than America as well. And they now have like meat free options and stuff like that. And I would never go to Subway in America. I've heard horror stories about Subway in America. So I haven't gone there in years.
Food poisoning from Subway in America.
Yeah. My sister found staples in her Subway sandwich in America, like staples. Yeah. So I'm like, I stay away from it in America, but here I'm like, I'll go to Subway every other week. You know what I mean? Like I crave yeah. Subway here, which is weird. So yeah, the food, I would say the food here is good. Like Nando's, they have lots of options, but they don't have the one thing that they're missing is like, yeah, Mexican place. So yeah. that's what I would say.
When I lived in the UK, I missed Mexican food so much. I couldn't believe like the difference in the Mexican food there. And then I came back to the US and my parents were living in Houston, still are. Mm-hmm. And so I flew back to Houston and I just ate Tex-Mex for like 2 weeks straight.
So
Tex-Mex
good.
And barbecue. Yeah. And there has never been a harder like shock to my system than just shoveling Tex-Mex and barbecue into my body for 2 weeks.
So worth it. So worth it.
It was very worth it.
Yeah. I went home for Christmas for I think 4 or 5 days. And every day, I'm pretty sure we had some type of Mexican food. My family loves Mexican, so they eat it regardless if I'm home or not. But I was like, I'm home. We're getting all the things I like. But it was hard because I didn't go home to Texas. I went home to Colorado for the first time. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't like my normal places, but they were better than the UK Mexican, if that made sense. So I was like, I'll take it. Whatever it takes, I'll take it.
Yeah.
Kennedy, did you ever go to Casa Bonita in Denver?
Casa Bonita. I think I've heard of it. I'm not sure if I've
it's been like
there. Is it
good? A huge Mexican place where like they have a playground throughout the entire restaurant. And it's like a huge cavern. Yeah. Okay, I had so many birthdays there where you just run around from the parents. Oh, Casa Bonita.
Yeah, hide from the parents so they can't find you. Exactly. Yeah, those are the best birthdays.
Okay, so let's get back into the basketball of it all a little bit. So,
we could do fast food though, Skylar. Just do fast food rankings in London. That'll be another podcast.
I feel like so many people have tuned out by this point, just listening to us talk about Mexican food. Okay, so the Lions recently took home their first piece of hardware in the team's history after you beat the Nottingham Wildcats 96-64 in the WBBL trophy. What did that win mean to your team? And how did it feel to be the team that kind of brings the Lions their first trophy?
Yeah, that was a really exciting game, obviously on Sky Sports and stuff like that. So the equivalent of what ESPN to America is, I guess, to British people. Mm-hmm. So the environment was really, really cool. And it was also cool because earlier in the season, there was another cup. I think it was the trophy, and we didn't get to play in it because we had COVID. Like, that's when we had gotten COVID. So it was almost like, okay, now we finally don't have COVID and now we can play, and we made it kind of thing. So we were making up for that a bit. So that was quite cool. But it was really exciting for all of us. As you said, it was our first one for the club. And I know last year, London Lions went like 0-18 or something. They didn't win a single game last year. So then this year we were sitting, you know, pretty good. And then to win a trophy for the organization was pretty cool. And then our boys won it as well. So to both bring it home, it was really good. And I think for our sponsorship and stuff like that as well with 777, like, it shows them that we're in it just as much as they're in it with us. So no, it was really, really cool. It was a fun game, a fun environment, a fun atmosphere, obviously no fans, which was a bit different, but I think at this point we're all used to it as you can be. And they did a good job with noise, and they had an MC and a DJ, so it still sounded like people were there, and the lights and stuff like that. So it was a good environment. Unfortunately, a girl on the other team, their best player, I would say, she got hurt within like the first 2 minutes of the game. So I think we all kind of felt that a bit, but we had played them twice before, and we had beaten them both times. And we're after the game, people were like saying how, oh, you know, they didn't have their best player, and that's probably why you guys won, and blah, blah, blah. But I think we're pretty happy in the fact that we'd beaten them twice with her and without some of our players. And it didn't really matter at that point, like, we had won, so a win's a win, and we were going to take it regardless of what others were saying. We were proud of ourselves.
Definitely. Yeah, and a dominant win at that, so.
Yeah, exactly. We got to sub in all of our younger players, all the academy kids. And I think for them, it's pretty cool. Yeah, pretty cool to have them be able to play on, you know, live TV and in that kind of environment in a pro league is pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. And then you were named WBBL Trophy MVP. With an incredible performance of 21 points, 9 assists, 7 steals, 6 rebounds. What? 7 steals?
Yeah.
I was writing it and I was like, did I write it wrong? And then I looked again and I was like, no, that's right.
I mean, you could have gotten a quadruple double. I mean, you really missed out. You were pretty close.
I know. I missed out on one yesterday too. I think I had 8 steals yesterday and 7 rebounds or something, along with like whatever it was yesterday. So I'm like, missed out again. I always miss out.
You got to do the Westbrook and just start stealing the rebounds from your bigs.
For real. I need to steal some of those.
Something. Ripping rebounds away from people, your own team. Terrible. So what did it mean for you to be named MVP? What was kind of going through your head when your name was called?
Honestly, I didn't even think that it would be me. I was not even focused. I thought it was going to be, you know, one of my other teammates who had, I was like, oh, it was just another game. I didn't think anything special of it. I thought I had played well, like we had played well, we had won. So I knew that something had gone right. But when they said the stats, I was like, no way I did all this. Cause I just didn't feel like it in the moment. You know what I mean? So then when they said my name, to watch my teammates, like the way that they were celebrating and excited for me, I think that meant more to me than the actual MVP. Because you care about those people. You go to war for your teammates, and you spend more time with them than I have my family this year. So they take a lot of you, and you take a lot of them. And so to see them as excited as they were for me and as excited as we all were just to win, I think that was more important than even winning the MVP. But it was a cool feeling because you get like the golden ball and people pay attention. So I think it was cool. And it was not only a statement, you know, for London Lions, but also for the whole league in general, that our team specifically, we came here to try to up the level of basketball in the WBBL. The people who have joined our team this year, and I think that we're doing that. So I think it was cool to kind of reaffirm that for everybody, that in ourselves, that we're trying to do what we're trying to do, we are doing.
Yeah. That's a good segue into my next question. So we had mentioned you recently broke the WBBL record for assists in a single game at 21 You also hold a ton of records, like we mentioned, at CU. All-time assists leader at 664. You're number one in assists per game. You're on the board for top 10 in so many categories, I can't even read them all. What does breaking records mean to you? It's very cool, and it's of course an accomplishment. When there's so many, though, where it's like you have broken 25 records, it's like I wonder if it just ends up becoming like another like box that you've ticked almost. Like, how do you think about records, and how do you think about records in relation to like your basketball career and your goals?
Yeah, I actually think about that. I thought about that yesterday, because obviously the 21 assists, I received a lot of messages from people that were like, have you ever heard of anybody getting 21 assists? This is incredible, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I don't think it still hasn't hit me. I'm like, oh, it's just 21 assists. You know what I mean? Like, for me, it wasn't anything that I thought was crazy, but everybody's telling me it is. So I'm like, maybe I should think it's crazier. You know, maybe I should be more proud of myself. But I think at the same time, like, I didn't really care what it was. I wasn't even focused on that. It was more so about the game. And I say that with my other records as well. Like, I set a lot of records at Colorado, but I never won a national championship. I never went to the NCAA tournament. We went to a postseason at WNIT, but it was never the NCAA. So stuff like that, where I wish, you know, I would trade those records for trips like that. You know what I mean? For different accolades with the team. And of course, the records are incredible. I've been super blessed to even, you know, have one, let alone what I've been, you know, given or worked for. But like I said, at the same time, I would trade every single one of them for wins or for trips to the tournament or for championships and stuff like that. So I think that's why, you know, yesterday it was cool to get the record, but the same, we got the win. And obviously Caledonia is a young team who's struggling in the league right now, but still, like, for me it was more important that we got the win. So I think, I don't know, like you said, the records are incredible. It's really cool, and it speaks a lot, I think, to my work ethic and stuff like that, which I love to spend time playing basketball. I love to, you know, get in the gym. I love to work hard, but at the same time, I would rather, you know, the stuff that happens to me is cool, but I would rather have it happen to my team, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, those assist records are a very team, they're very team records. Like,
it's a good thing to hold records.
Yes. Just 21 field goals in a game that you, like, that's, it's not like a hockey assist where it's like you pass and they pass and score and you still get the credit, double. So like the 21, that's a lot of field goals that people have to hit no matter what the competition is. So it's a nice like team goal to be like, we did this together. You can share it with the team and get that win.
Yeah. No, yeah. I would take the assist too, because like you said, it definitely has an impact on others. So if I'm going to set a record or set, you know, something, then I want it to be helping others in some sort of way. So it's I'll take it. It's a good one to have. That's for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, you're leading the WBBL in assists, and what, like, the highlights, you have the highlight assists, which, you know, there are the assists, which are like, all right, you pass it out to the wing, they hit the corner three, you get a little layup. Those are like the standard assists. You get the like highlight assists, like the behind the back in the paint. Yeah. The Jokic assists. So what kind of inspired you growing up to like prioritize getting these assists, pass first? Like, that is a kind of a unique thing for point guards, where AAU culture is very like, I'm going to get my points. So what kind of developed that get other people buckets type of mentality?
Yeah, I was always the kid who was getting yelled at to shoot more. like, I'll be open and I would rather pass it to a teammate who's under the basket open. And I remember always getting told by my coaches, like, shoot it, you have to shoot it more. And so growing up, I tried to, you know, incorporate like the shooting and the scoring aspect, and I have, but at the same time, like, I can draw a lot of attention by the way that I play. So I know that other people are going to be open. And I trust those people to make it. Even if they don't, everybody on my team knows if they miss a layup, it's going to come back towards them the next play. Like, I've heard a lot of stories where people, like my post players or whatever, I've played with people who will pass it to them, and if they don't catch it, they don't make it, then that teammate will never pass it to them again. And I'm like, that's just, it's stupid. You know what I mean? If you love basketball, I'm not thinking when I'm coming down the court, oh, you know, Paige didn't just catch it, I'm not going to pass it to her. Steph didn't just make that layup, so I'm not going to pass it to her. I'm thinking, oh, they're open. I don't care if they, you know, if they miss it or make it, like, I'm going to throw it to them, kind of thing. So I think just for me growing up, I was always told, yeah, you need to pass it or you need to shoot it more. But I was always the kid who was like, I don't care what these people say. I want to pass. I like the feeling of letting other people have the spotlight, I guess, if that makes sense. Like, I'm okay with being in the background and letting them shine. And I think like you said, nowadays that's really hard for kids because all you hear and all you see is these kids in the gym doing like 50 moves with their trainers and working on their shots. Yeah. And it's hard to find kids who want to pass. And like, mm-hmm. I think for a point guard, it's really important that you lead the team through, you know, like passing. Yeah, of course you can score and stuff like that, but a true point guard gets their teams in sets, passes the ball, stuff like that. So I think, of course, you have the point guards who are changing the game a bit and they are scoring more and stuff like that. But I think, I don't know, I grew up thinking that a point guard was a player who passes it, gets, you know what I mean, stuff like that. So, of course, it's good to incorporate the scoring aspect of it. But I think it's also good to be a player who wants to help other people, like people out, especially at the point guard position. That's your job, is to help other people out. So if I can do that, then I've done my job.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you're an incredible threat to score, which is why people collapse on you and you can get those assists. So you exactly, need both. Yeah, you need both. And you have both. Ton. Yeah, definitely.
Thank you. Yeah.
But I have a question about mentality. And Skylar, I don't think we've told the story on the pod before, but we thought it would be a fun content series to be like, Brian trains to like try out for a BBL team. And so we had Coach Paul Nicholson on from the Raiders. And I was like, what do you think it would take? And it's like a funny thing. And I watched, you know, the London Lions versus the Plymouth Raiders. And I was like, oh God, no, like DeAndre Liggins picking me up full court, like yikes. Ashley Hamilton, yikes. That's not happening. It'll be a fun content thing. And then we're like, all right, Skylar, this is when we were new, you know, BBL, WBBL fans. And so we were like, let's turn on, you know, WBBL. Let's check out a London Lions game. And we were watching and you were playing and I was like, fuck, Skylar, there's no way. Like, we are not at this level. She is a killer. Like, she is hitting threes in people's faces. You're passing it out when they collapse. So it seems like from a fan's perspective, your mentality is like, you go hard. Like, it seems like you're ruthless out there. Where did you develop that mentality? How do you get psyched up for the games? Like, you looked scary to play against from a fan's perspective.
Can I just add, I watched a post-game like interview with you and I watched it and Brian was showing me and I just looked at Brian after and I was like, she is a killer. Like, you had just come off of this like insane performance, dominant win, and they interviewed you and you were just stone cold. You're just like, yeah, I'm just happy to get the win. Good game.
Yeah, it was just like, holy smokes.
It was just business, just strictly business.
No,
so
yeah.
So just thoughts. That's my question. How do you get into that mode? Yeah. Are you a killer? And how do you get into, how do you get into that mode?
Am I a killer? People love to say that I am, you know, I hear that a lot as well. But I also hear like, I'm just really mellow. You'll never see me get like too high. You'll never see me get too mm-hmm. low. I'm almost very nonchalant about it. Like, I just go in there, I do what I need to do, and I get out. It's kind of, I guess, how I go about it. But I would say, I'm a silent killer. Like, I don't say much, I don't whatever, but I'm more so that, like, how I play do all the talking.
Yeah. So you're not like a DT, like just trash talking on the court, dropping F-bombs all over the place?
No, I do talk to the refs a lot, though. I've gotten more technical this year than I ever have. These refs, they kill me, you know?
I've heard that from a lot of players.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. It's so frustrating sometimes. And I almost want a technical so I can like get myself like in the mood where I'm like, all right, cool. Like now I can go kind of thing. But no, yeah, I would say I am a killer, but I don't try to be, if that makes sense. Like mm-hmm. I just, I'm like, all right, I'm going to go about my business, whatever. Like, and if that makes me in that moment a killer, then I am. But I have heard that, like, everybody keeps telling me like, oh, you're a killer. You're this or that. But then I hear all the time too, like, you're so nonchalant about it. Like, I just walk around like it's whatever at the same time. Like,
that's,
you
almost scarier.
Yeah,
know
it's
me from,
that's why.
Whoever, you know what I mean?
It's,
and then
because
I go, oh, wow, she can actually play. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
That is certainly why. It is when someone does that to you and then doesn't say anything, you're like, I can't even get in there. Like, it's just over for me right now. But yeah, that's very funny that you hear that a lot, because we were prepping for the pod and scared of that. But let's switch gears a little bit. Let's alternate on this. We're going to do a little fast round here, getting to know the London Lions. So getting to know your team. So we're going to ask some questions about your teammates. Rapid fire. Just first name that pops into your head. Sound
okay.
Good?
Yeah.
And feel free to throw people under the bus or whatever you want to do. It's all right.
Okay.
Expose them.
All right. We'll go back and forth. Funniest player on the team.
Steph.
Who's the best dressed?
Chantel.
Best hops.
Shanice, she's a bunny. Yeah, she can hop.
Who's the team mom? I feel like there's always one.
Chantel, I would say. She's also the oldest, so she probably fits that mold the best.
Yeah.
Most likely to make everyone run sprints.
Paige. Yeah, definitely Paige.
It's so instant. Yeah. I have some more random ones, Skylar.
Keep going.
But most active on social media.
Paige. Paige is like a model. So she's not only like basketball, but she'll post her 50,000 modeling like subscriptions and stuff like that. So definitely Paige.
You have any more, Skylar?
Who's the most likely to get into it with a ref? Is it you?
I'm up on the list, but I would say Paige is up on the list as well. And Steph and Chantel, we've all had our like fair share of technicals. So one of us four, we're always talking to the ref. So easily one of us four.
And who has the most intense like pregame routines? Who needs to like, if they don't get their routine in, they're going to freak out?
I would say probably Cassie. She's like our knockdown shooter and she has so many different things she does with like her eyes and her rotations and stuff like that. She'll sit there and she'll do stuff with like a pen and like look at the pen.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so I'm gonna have to film it one time for you guys, but it's I would say it's definitely Cassie, but it works, so I'm not gonna knock it because she hits shots, so I'm gonna take it.
You gotta get those eye exercises down.
And it's always the shooter. Like there's just something like superstitious about shooting that you have to you gotta get the routines in. All right, that's all I got, Brian.
All right, that's a great rapid fire session. Last question for you, Kennedy. How can we help grow the game of basketball in the UK? You know, what have you seen since coming over? You've been in basketball a long time. What do you think that the UK can do to continue to grow the game of basketball?
I would say, first of all, just funding. I know in America, for instance, there's so much more money that goes into not only men's basketball, but also women's basketball. There's still a disparity there, but I think it's growing and more people are recognizing it, especially after this year and the things that happened at the NCAA tournament. I saw all those tweets and stuff. So I think that helps a lot. But I would say also just getting it out there. The fact that we were on Sky Sports this year is a huge thing for the game. Yep. And I think it allowed a lot more people to have access to it. Because a lot of people don't know that people can't watch what they don't know is happening, if that makes sense. So I think just the ability and the availability to watch it. And then I think just more support from people who do play it, like on the men's side or that kind of thing, because there is people follow men's basketball and they think, oh, you know, women, there's always that, you know, mantra of, oh, it's women's basketball. They can't do this. They can't do that. But it's different. It's a different game. And if people, I can understand if people watched it and didn't like it, but if they haven't watched it, then they don't know what they're, you know, and what they're, if they watch it and they don't like it, cool. That's fine. But give it a chance, I guess, is more so what I would think. And I think also, I think in America, a lot of people are allowed to play multiple sports growing up. And I think in other countries, it's not as popular. So I think to be able to kind of spread that as well, like you can play, they call it football here. You can play football, you can play basketball, you can play, you know, tennis. That's okay. It doesn't need to be one sport that you focus on for your entire, you know, upbringing. But yeah, I just honestly think more support of it. Because I think if people knew about it and had the option to hear about it and see it and watch it and stuff like that, then obviously that helps, because when people see it, they talk about it and they talk about it to other people who talk about it to other people. So I think being able to spread it through word of mouth and experience, it means a lot, and it can shape a lot of people's lives who maybe haven't had the availability to, or had the option to be affected by it.
Yeah. And I think this season's been doing a really good job of showcasing that, seeing that like the Sky Sports games, the WBBL and BBL trophy finals were really good games. And that was really fun to watch.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. Like they were close games. So people, you know, or they were not super close, but they were good games where there's competition. And you can see that, you know, that there's girls who have talent if they just give them a chance.
Yeah, definitely. Well, thank you so much for coming on. We appreciate it on the off day, and good luck with the rest of the season.
Thank you guys so much. I really appreciate it.